This is episode number 36 with the founder and CEO of Transitive, Christian Pillett. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. What's up, everyone? Thanks for tuning in. It's been a couple of weeks since I've had an interview episode for you guys, so excited to bring this one to you. My guest today is Christian Pillett. Christian is the founder and CEO of Transitive, which is a marketing company that uses machine learning to identify their clients' most effective marketing channels and prescribe budgets. They're able to leverage one of their clients' most valuable assets, which is their existing clients' data, and help them better market their business in a much more cost-effective manner. Transitive has a focus working with franchise brands and franchisees for those brands. And due to his involvement in franchising, Christian's also a partner in FranBridge Capital, which is a small investment fund that invests in home service franchise businesses. And if you tuned into my episode with John Ostenson several months ago, John is also a partner in FranBridge Capital with Christian. On top of all of that, Christian started numerous other businesses over his entrepreneurial career and brings a ton of insight into what it takes to start a business, how you need to prepare mentally to start a business. And he also talks about some of the pros and cons in his experience of a startup business compared to a franchise business. So I'm excited for everyone to hear from Christian. Without further ado, let's go ahead and drop in. For those that are listening in that may not know you or be familiar, maybe just kind of give us a quick overview of kind of who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are right now as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so Christian Pillett, I've really been an entrepreneur since I was a child, but I started my first business in college, and it was a company called Vacation Food Source. We delivered food to vacation homes. It was delivered the day people arrived.
Oh, very cool.
And it was a really great idea. Unfortunately, like, it was before Airbnb, because they would have been great partners for us.
Yeah, no doubt.
I started it with like $3,000. I ran it for 2 years, and you know, it grew nicely, but ended up the supplier I used got bought by Marriott Hotels.
Okay.
And as soon as they did that, they were like, go away, little boy. It's just a small part of their revenue. And
sure.
So I got my first taste of my entrepreneurial experience through that. And from there, I actually found myself in the same industry that you find yourself in. So I got really good at digital marketing, really interested in digital marketing. I realized how I could grow businesses and went to work at a small digital marketing company in Atlanta. I was kind of really like the third or fourth full-time person there.
Okay.
And we ended up growing that to 50 or 70 people, turned into a really relatively big franchise agency. Started my own agency after that. So I kind of took parts about the agency business model that I liked. I applied some software to it and started an agency, grew that to be a top five franchise marketing agency. So I'm really focused in the digital marketing for franchise space. And then about 2 years ago, I started Transitive, which is a customer data platform. We basically take information out of companies' point of sale CRM systems. We pull it into our platform and we really bring their data to life so that they can make actionable decisions on it. And then we help them use that in advertising on really any advertising channel that you can think of. So that was kind of the entrepreneurial journey. And just as a person, I'm a big fan of soccer. I spend my weekends watching soccer and playing soccer, sailing when I can. And yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Very cool. I appreciate the overview. And there's a lot to kind of dig into more because, you know, as you've already kind of mentioned, you've had quite a few entrepreneurial ventures. You're involved in numerous ones right now. It sounds like for you, like it was for me and like it is for so many people involved in franchising, you kind of fell backwards into it, right? Because you started working for a digital marketing agency that kind of had a focus on franchising. Is that right?
That is correct. And I did not really know what franchising was at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny.
I might have said I didn't interview, but.
Yeah. You didn't necessarily admit that when you interviewed, I'm sure, but no, it's so interesting. Yeah. You know, we're both connected with tons of people in franchising, and it seems like the vast majority of people that are involved in franchising, they kind of fall backwards into it. But once they kind of understand this world of franchising and really get plugged into it, they never leave. They find ways to stay plugged into it. And, you know, you bring an interesting perspective because, and we'll get into more of this, I'm sure, but, you know, you've worked on various sides of franchising. You've been a service provider, you know, in that you've got your own agency. You've worked for agencies that provide marketing support for franchise organizations. But you're also involved as a franchisee now as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you've gotten involved as a franchise owner yourself?
Yeah. So about, I think it was about 6 years ago, I kind of stumbled across a franchise business that I was interested in getting into. They were a client of mine. I basically started doing the math. I was like, well, if they can get leads at this cost and they close this many leads, then this makes a really good business. Yeah. There's a company called Cherry Blow Dry Bar, and I ended up buying three of those locations with partners in the Atlanta area. And really that was just it. It was how many leads can we get? Can we get them below this cost? And the business model kind of worked as predicted. And then from there, about 2 years ago, I ended up getting into service franchising. So there's I can go into it later, but there are a lot of benefits to running home service franchises as opposed to actually having retail space.
Yep.
And I got into OxyFresh Carpet Cleaning, and then most recently Home Clean Heroes and Pool Scouts, which are owned by Buzz Franchise Brands.
Yeah. So I love that point, and we can go ahead and jump into it if you want to, because it's come up before. You know, I have a consulting business where I help people identify and investigate franchise businesses that are likely to be a good fit for them. And, you know, one of the early conversations I have with anyone that I work with is I really stress the importance of keeping an open mind in terms of what businesses they would be willing to explore. Because as you just mentioned, service businesses have a lot of advantages just the way their business models are structured compared to, you know, more traditional retail type businesses. But they're usually not the sexiest businesses in the world. Like you just said, carpet cleaning, residential home cleaning, and, you know, pool cleaning and maintenance, right? I have shelving, closets, and insulation. Like not the sexiest, most trendy, like exciting businesses to talk about, but from a dollars and cents standpoint, they can make good sense as investments, and the ROI tends to be a lot stronger, at least in my experience and what I've seen. So from your perspective, and with Cherry Blow Dry Bar, that was more of a brick and mortar kind of retail business, right?
Yeah. So Cherry, brick and mortar retail. And I think the just focusing on why people are getting into franchising, you deal with this all the time, but when people come to you and they say, hey, I want to get into franchising, you say, why do you want to do that? It's like, well, I want to be my own boss, and I also want to have some freedom, and like, I want to live a certain lifestyle. And you don't realize that when you purchase a physical retail space, that it's your lifestyle is going to be tied to that physical space, and it's going to be tied to that retail location and probably the 2 to 3 miles around it for as long as you own that business.
Yep.
And unless you grow to a certain size and grow out of a certain size. But I think the retail franchises, a lot of the reasons people get into franchising just don't jive with owning a retail business. Home service franchises, one, you have low overhead. Two, you typically don't have any personal guarantees on real estate, which is something mm-hmm. that real estate companies always push for.
Yep.
Three, the margins are almost always better.
Yep. Because you don't have all the overhead. And
you don't have, that's exactly it. So margins are really nice. And then you basically learn a craft. And if you can learn the craft really well, be able to explain it, then you can do really well in these home service businesses, and you can do it from almost anywhere.
Well, that, and that's such a good point, right? Because everyone's reasoning is, you know, usually a little bit different, but there's, in my experience, some very common reasons that people want to get into business for themselves: freedom, flexibility, you know, usually being part of that. And so to your point, with these home service businesses, the vast majority of them, at least the franchises out there, are designed to be scalable, meaning, you know, it's not something that the franchisee is meant to wear all of the hats in the business. You know, the franchisee's role is normally to come in and, you know, build out a team that can then go out and provide the service for the clients and kind of handle the day to day. And that over time gives you as the owner a lot more flexibility. We were talking before we started recording, you know, you and your wife are at a point now where you can pretty much live anywhere and, you know, handle your responsibilities and run your businesses. You know, my wife and I are in a similar position. You likely don't have that much flexibility if you do have a retail location. So those are some of the, I think, common advantages of these service-based businesses, but it kind of requires a counterintuitive approach for people because, you know, so often someone would look at a carpet cleaning business and say, well, you know, I don't know anything about cleaning carpet. Why would I want to get into that business? I don't want to spend my time cleaning carpet. So
yeah,
my biggest piece of advice to anyone I work with is don't focus so much on the widget, whatever the product or the service is. You've got to really understand what your role as the franchise owner is meant to be in a particular business model and figure out if that role aligns with your skill set, with your experience, and also has the potential to give you the quality of life and all the other things that you're looking for, you know, as a business owner. So I love that point that you brought it up.
Yeah. And the other thing with restaurant retail, you typically have like 25, 30, 40 employees per store.
Yeah.
And you're doing the same kind of volume in the home service business with, you know, five or six.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's been a business owner, you know that HR challenges are typically some of the most time consuming, stressful, and just, it can be the best and worst part about business ownership.
Yeah. I think it's in just about any business, one of, if not the most challenging aspect of it is attracting and keeping the right people on your team. And so to your point, you know, you don't need usually as many employees in a service-based business to get the same type of scale that you would in most retail businesses. There's exceptions, of course, but so no, I think that's a great point and love that that came up. I want to circle back though, because, you know, as you've talked about already, you've got experience with kind of startup businesses that you've started from the food delivery business in college to your own digital marketing agency. And now you have franchise businesses that you've been involved in. So what are some of the pros and cons in your experience to, you know, starting a franchise business versus your own startup where you're essentially, you know, building something from scratch, from the ground up?
Yeah, good question. So I'll go into both of them. I'm very much an entrepreneur and always have been. And some people who get into franchising, they're not necessarily entrepreneurs. They're kind of operators of businesses. Mm-hmm. And corporate executives perform really, really well operating franchises because they know how to follow a playbook. So I fall on the other side of it where I look at something and I like to think that I don't look at what it is. I look at what it could become. Mm-hmm. And so with the franchise model, I'm consistently trying to tweak little things that the franchisors give me.
Sure.
And sometimes that's great. Sometimes that's actually not so great because they have a proven model. They've got a system that works and you don't need to tweak it. I can give you an example, for one of our franchises, I ran a direct mail campaign recently. And so the franchisee before me from the same direct mail campaign in a different area got 27 leads. I tweaked like a couple of the targeting settings and we got 6 total leads through it. So it was a drastic difference. And they just kind of came to me and they're like, Christian, you should really do it our way next time.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, the difference between doing it is the infrastructure, the support, the startup costs. And I would never start my own home service business.
Right.
There's no reason to. Tech businesses are completely different, where I'm typically going after something where it's a new idea. So like shipping food to vacation homes and having it delivered the day you arrived, that it didn't exist in 2009.
Right.
Like that wasn't a thing. And so I was really trying to make that a thing. It just didn't become a thing.
It was a little ahead of its time. Now you've got DoorDash, you've got Uber Eats, you've got Airbnb. You were just a little ahead of the times, I think.
Yeah, ahead of the time, and you know, 19 years old, poor execution, probably like partied too much or something. So sure. I was just having fun though. I mean, I was working full time trying to develop this business, and I learned a lot about business through that experience. But now with Transitive, I mean, we're a venture backed tech startup. We're growing incredibly rapidly. We're basically providing franchisors and other automotive businesses with ways to dynamically take their data and personalize marketing, which for the longest time, everyone was like, well, if I just hired a better Google search agency, they'd probably optimize my Google search. And I was in that business. So people would be like, can you do better than this company at this Google search? And we were like, yeah, of course, every time. But what we started to realize over time, or what I realized 2 years ago, is if companies just took their existing assets, which is their customer data,
yeah,
and started to leverage that asset in their own marketing, you could really create better marketing results. And then if you take your customer data, which is your asset, and you tie the media results to the operational and customer actions that you want, then you're not tying like a Google search campaign to a lead, you're tying that Google search campaign to a customer, and a customer that becomes a reoccurring customer. Mm. And so really we're with Transitive, it's new technology, but we're trying to help people focus on the right types of customers and focus on the things that impact their bottom line at the franchise and just the KPIs that make the business go.
Yeah. It's a different way of thinking about it, because in our businesses over the years, man, we've worked with, I couldn't even tell you how many different digital agencies, and you know, everyone tells you they've got a, you know, slightly different approach, or they're going to be able to get you better results than the next. In my experience, they're all about the same. You know, there's only so many levers that you can pull to get better SEO results or even better SEM results. So I think, you know, the way you're thinking about it differently, and leveraging the data that companies already have through their client base is brilliant. To kind of summarize in terms of the pros and cons in your experience of franchising versus startups, some of the cons potentially are that, you know, as a franchisee, you may not have as much leeway to really be entrepreneurial. You are kind of agreeing to follow a system and processes that have been proven to work over time. And then some of the pros are, you know, the ramp up's usually quicker. There is a system and a process in place. Am I missing anything? Anything that you would add to that?
Yeah, I mean, pros of franchising, predictability. The predictability of franchising keeps me sane as a business owner.
Yeah.
Because I know if I do this one thing, I get another action out of it. And
yep,
that's really good. It's really hard to come up with a brand. So like having one of our slide decks even says like, we believe that basically a great brand and a great team allow a franchise to grow. And then we believe that data allows a franchise to prosper. So like
I like that.
The branding, you only get lucky with branding like a quarter of the time. Sometimes it's just the brand that's really good. So I believe in buying into the good brands, and I believe investing in brand awareness and brand building so that when people in other parts of the country move here, they search for, you know, your franchise service.
Yep.
So that's something you don't get in a tech company. With tech, it's just, it's fast paced. It's, I'm obviously passionate about it. I just love the growth. I love the newness of it. And I love creating, basically a market where there wasn't even a market before.
Definitely.
And that's, yeah. So they're totally different, but the predictability of franchising is very nice.
Well, it is. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm like, you're not going to be able to find another investment opportunity where you get as much data before committing to making the investment, right? I mean, there's so much information that you have the ability to tap into. There's no guarantees in franchising, just like there's no guarantees in really any sort of investing. But you get so much information provided to you, including the historical data of other franchisees that have come before you. And there is definitely some predictability to it. The other thing to me is, and I've seen this in our businesses, it just gives you the ability to run faster. You know, you eliminate so many of the time consuming aspects of starting a business that if you were doing your own startup, you know, you'd spend months, if not years, just getting, you know, laying that initial foundation. Whereas with a good franchise, that's already there. You plug in and you just start learning the business. And so, you know, usually it at least puts you in a position to ramp up a lot quicker. And that's why so many small businesses struggle, is because they can't weather the ramp up. It's not always because the business idea doesn't make sense or the model doesn't make sense. It's just that, you know, they can't weather the ramp up and survive long enough to get the positive cash flow. So you eliminate a lot of that. So, because I get that all the time from people, right? They're like, well, I'm a pretty accomplished business person, so I don't need a franchise. Like, a franchise is for someone that doesn't know anything about business, and, you know, they're more or less a puppet. And it's like, that's not the case at all. I think there is such a thing as someone that's maybe too entrepreneurial to be a franchisee if you really just can't follow a system or a process at all. But, you know, part of what I tell people as they're investigating franchises is, you know, you should really be trying to get a feel for that relationship between the franchisor and the franchisee with any particular brand. What's the culture within a franchise? Do they give franchisees the leeway to experiment and try different things? Because the best franchises do. And that's how they continue to learn and evolve over time, is by learning from their franchisees, not by saying, hey, this is so rigid of a system that you know, can't try anything new ever. And so it's to me, it's kind of finding that sweet spot, you know, getting in with a franchise that is going to allow you to try different things and think outside of the box, but also has really good systems and processes already in place.
So interesting you bring that up. Everyone always asks me, like, what's the number one thing that you look for when you're buying this brand, or, you know, would you buy it again? It always comes down to team. It's like, does my mindset at a local level align with the team at a national level? And am I capable of working with them and just having very direct and frank conversations about what we're looking to accomplish?
Yeah.
And I'd say the brands that we pick, I've got great relationships with the franchisor. They know I'm going to be a little bit crazy sometimes and try some things. And they just kind of let it go. And sometimes,
well, my guess is they like that about you, right? Because they're like, hey, you know, Christian, he might swing and miss every now and then, but chances are he's going to bring some great ideas to the table that the whole system will be able to benefit from.
Yeah, a few things that we've done have been implemented across multiple systems that I've been at. So,
yeah,
it definitely helps the brand. And as you said, if they're willing to take advice from me and just know that, hey, I'm going to bring a very like tech forward approach to this, and if they're willing to have that on their team, then they're typically a great fit for us.
Well, and that's all things.
Another,
that, you get to vet before you commit to anything. You get to meet with the leadership team of any franchise company and really get a sense of, because I think you're spot on in saying that, you know, you should feel good about that aspect of it before investing in a franchise business. Cause at the end of the day, it's a partnership. It's a business partnership is all it is at the end of the day. And you want to feel comfortable that you can work well with your business partners.
Yeah. And another thing that you mentioned, it was probably like a minute ago or so, but you just mentioned that, not all franchises work.
Yeah.
And when talking about this partnership thing, it's like, okay, well, you got into business with this partner, which is the franchisor. And then, you know, not all franchises work. So like, we all know that some franchises go out of business, but what I think is interesting for anyone who you talk to or anyone that's evaluating a franchise, it's really interesting to me when people blame the franchisor.
Yeah.
It's like, you bought this system that works and has 300 other working stores or 50 other working stores, whatever it is. And you didn't follow the system, but you're saying it's not because of you, it's because of the franchisor. So another thing with franchisees when they're investing, it's like, look, you've got to be ready to take ownership of this.
Yeah.
And like, if it doesn't work, the number one reason it doesn't work is because of you. You didn't go out and network, you didn't do the activities, you didn't follow the system. And like, people should kind of know that getting into it.
Well, 100% is such a good point. And I'll even tie that back to what I mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, understanding what your role as the franchise owner is meant to be in the business. Cause I've seen like one of the franchises we're involved in, any franchisee that has ever struggled in that business, it comes down to one thing. The franchisee is trying to do too much themselves. Instead of building a team and delegating, they're trying to do it all themselves and they hit a ceiling. You know, it was rarely that the franchisees weren't working hard and didn't, you know, want to be successful. But at the end of the day, they weren't following the system because they weren't staying in their lane as a franchise owner, meaning they were trying to do the things in their business that they should have been putting a team in place to do. And it's the difference between working on the business and working in the business, and they were working in the business. But you're so right, because people have to understand that buying a franchise is not an easy button. It doesn't mean that there isn't going to be hard work involved and that, you know, you're going to have to really put your head down and get after it. We already kind of talked about the benefits of it, but it's not like the business is just going to fall into your lap and be done for you. And I think some people think of it that way.
Some people they sign the franchise agreement and then they're like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like I've made it.
Come build this business for me.
Yeah. I've told so many franchisees will give me a call and they'll be like, well, what should I do? It's like, you should literally start working right now. I understand you haven't gone through training, but you need to get into these BNI groups. You need to do this. Like, you need to get out in the community. You need to put on social media that you purchased this and start talking about it.
Like, 100%.
The work starts as soon as you sign that agreement. And so many people are just like, I got the easy button here.
Yeah, I know. And it still blows my mind to this day, like how many people will invest in a franchise and then just almost from day one think they know better than the franchisor and try to do it all their own way. I'm not talking about tweaking, you know, a couple little things here and there based on prior experience, just saying, yeah, I know I just paid a lot of money for this franchise and like access to the playbook, but I think my playbook's going to be better. So let's just roll with that. And I've never seen that work.
Yeah.
And like when I was doing franchise sales, I could always tell that, you know, I was talking to someone that really didn't understand franchising and the value of it when I'd get on the phone with them and they'd be like, all right, so tell me how much your franchise is going to be able to make me. And I'll tell you if I'm going to, you know, be willing to invest. And I'm like, we should probably just hang up now. Cause it's clear to me, this is going to go nowhere. Don't really understand what we're talking about here. Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast. And that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life. And it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. Well, this is good stuff, man. And I know that, you know, we don't have a ton of time left. So there are a couple other things that I wanted to pick your brain on while I have you. Keeping in mind that a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are what I would call aspiring entrepreneurs, meaning, you know, they kind of have this drive to get into business for themselves, but they haven't kind of made that leap yet, and they maybe don't know how to get started. So, and, you know, I'm sure you've experienced it just like I have, you know, even because what I found is it doesn't always get easier, even as you start more and more businesses. You always have those butterflies. You always have those voices in the back of your head, you know, saying, what if, you know, what if something doesn't go right? What if it fails? Can you share a little bit of your experience in terms of how you've overcome the, what I call FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, you know, that most people experience when they're considering starting a business?
Yeah. So it's interesting. The fear, uncertainty, and doubt, I'll take it in a different way. I was always fearful of working in a corporate company with 30,000 or 40,000 employees.
Yeah.
Going to work from 9 to 5 every day and just like kind of punching a clock. Mm-hmm. And that actually scares me more than entrepreneurship scares me.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with it, but I know it's not my personality.
Sure.
So when you're getting into a business, you just have to, if I'd gone into the corporate world, I would have switched jobs 15 times already.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm too engaged and I want to learn and I want to be able to make decisions. And in the corporate world, you've got to kind of wait on some decisions. So the thought of starting a business though, as soon as you get over, like, really the first one, I was like, what's the worst that can happen? All right. So, and I do this every time. It's like, okay, so if I do this, what's the worst that can happen?
Yep.
And you take like all the personal guarantees into account. You take, you know, okay, I took debt for some businesses. There's all these things that can go into it. But when you really break it down, it's like, okay, I've got a really good relationship with my family. I've got a really great support group. I've got 5 mentors that I've had for most of my life that I consistently rely on.
Yep.
If I totally fail, one of them will give me a job.
Yeah. Right.
Like they all believe in me, and they know I'm going to try to try my best at whatever I'm working on.
Yeah.
But as soon as you, as soon as you just come to terms with what's the worst that can happen, then I feel like you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And the worst that can happen is literally usually just taking yourself back like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, it's usually like for most people, I think their minds conjure up these worst case scenarios that are never going to be that bad. You know, even if it really did just all go to shit, it's probably not usually anywhere near as bad as what our minds kind of make us think it could be. I don't know if you're a Tim Ferriss fan or not, but I'm a big Tim Ferriss fan. He's got a TED talk that he did a few years ago. And he does this exercise that he calls fear setting. And it's exactly what you just described, where if he's struggling with a decision that scares him, he'll list out all of the worst case scenarios. But then he'll also kind of try to figure out what's the probability of these worst case scenarios actually playing themselves out. And then he'll kind of list out, if a worst case scenario does happen, what can I do to bring myself back? And he said, you know, 9 times out of 10, if he goes through that exercise, he realizes that, number one, the worst case scenarios are not as bad as he initially imagined. Number two, the likelihood of them happening are pretty slim. And number three, even if they did, he's going to be able to get back to where he was pretty quickly and pretty easily. And so, like, I've actually even put together a worksheet the way he describes doing this exercise in his TED talk, and I give it to the folks that I work with, because everyone has it. It's human nature to have that, you know, kind of fear and uncertainty and doubt. But I think you're spot on in terms of how to kind of process through some of that.
Yeah. It's interesting without knowing that he did that way, which I'll probably go read that, cause I'm a huge fan of just any book really.
Yeah.
I always group things into three buckets. It's like, okay, what's the best outcome? What's the most likely, like, mediocre outcome? And then what's the worst? And so looking at these things, I'll see with the last couple of franchises, like, okay, if this goes horribly wrong, which there's probably like a 10% chance that happens, then this is my worst case. I kind of revert back 2 years of my life.
Yeah.
Like from where I am. But then in the mediocre case, which I give like a 60% chance of happening, where just as mediocre, probably does well, where the average franchisee on the item 19, it's like, okay, I can live with that outcome. And then in the upper end case, it's like, okay, I can take all of these skills I've learned over the years and do better, then we're going to get this outcome. So I always try to group it into three buckets in a similar way. I just don't evaluate them all individually.
Yeah. And I think it's smart to think about it that way, right? Because if the worst case scenario is maybe you go back 2 or 3 years, but if the best case scenario is you launch yourself ahead 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 years, then I like those odds. And I think the other thing that people have to take into consideration is what's the risk of not taking any action, right? Because like you said, for a lot of people, their fear is just plateauing, right? And kind of being stuck in the same spot for years and years and years. So sure, you want to analyze the risk of taking action and, you know, in the case of this conversation, starting a business. But I think you also have to really think about what's the risk of me not doing anything. Right. What's the worst case scenario of me being in the exact same spot 3 years from now because I got paralyzed and never took any action? Well, I love this, man. Any kind of parting words of wisdom or advice for any aspiring entrepreneurs out there that are maybe just a little bit stuck and don't quite know how to get started, but yet they know that working for themselves is what they want to do versus working for someone else?
Yeah, getting started is an interesting one. So I actually speak at a couple of colleges here in the Atlanta area, and I'll talk to their entrepreneurship classes. And everyone's always like, you know, I kind of know I want to do this. What do I need to get started? So I over the past few years, I've kind of refined the answer. And I always tell people that they just need to get really good at something. Like, and that's not necessarily within the franchise lane, but if you can get really, really good at one thing and then bring in people around you who are good at the other parts of the business. But if you're really good at solving one sort of problem, then for me, you're ready to start a business.
Yeah.
So focus on your strengths, try to get really, really good, better than anyone at one thing, and you'll probably do quite well. And then I always say have mentors around you.
Yeah, so definitely.
I've had 5 mentors for a long time, but there are people, like even today, I'd walk up to someone if I respected what they were doing and just say, hey, I'd love to call you if I have questions about this type of thing. And I'm consistently asking people for advice because I definitely don't know. I really don't know a lot of things. There are a lot of better people with more experience, better advice, who are good at that one thing.
Yeah.
I just kind of know my lane and I'm always asking for help.
Well, I think that's great advice. And, you know, very similar to what so many other, you know, successful entrepreneurs that I've had on the podcast have said, right? And I was given very similar advice by a mentor of mine when I was in college, which is, you know, become the best at something or become an expert at something. And in the terms that I was getting this advice, it wasn't even so much related to entrepreneurship, but more just make yourself invaluable, you know, to a company or an organization that you're with by becoming an expert in a certain thing. But that's advice I've carried with me and really tried to take to heart. And I think especially in the day and age that we live in, to start a business, you don't need to be an expert at everything, right? I mean, you can, through technology, outsource so many different components of a business and do it in many cases more cost effectively. So really you need an idea and some expertise, and that's kind of the recipe you need to get started. So I think that's really good advice. Well, look, I know you've got to run. If you can give me like 2 more minutes, I've got a lightning round, which is just 4 questions. I ask the same 4 questions to every guest that comes on the podcast, and we can run through these really quickly if you're cool with that.
Let's do it.
All right. And this first one goes hand in hand with what you just mentioned about having mentors. So curious, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? And that could be in business or just general life advice.
So best piece of advice I've ever received, I've got to say, is I was starting my own agency a few years ago. And this one mentor of mine who ended up actually working with me at that agency, he was like, why are you still thinking about this? He was like, you've got all the tools to do this. Why are you still thinking about it? Just go.
Yeah.
And well, that was a specific experience. If you feel like 90% confident about something, just go.
Yeah.
Like, just do it.
I agree, man. And I've got kind of a theme or a mantra, I guess, that internally I've embraced and I talk about it on the podcast. Drop in is kind of my mantra, right? But it's the same thing. Like at some point, stop thinking about it and just drop in and go, and like, you know, you'll figure it out. But if you find yourself constantly coming back to it, that's a good sign that you probably just need to take some action and start making moves. Next question is, do you have any sort of a morning routine, anything that you try to do every morning to prime yourself for a successful day?
So you and Graham Chapman always ask this question.
Hey, Graham stole it from me if he's going around asking this question, because he's been on the podcast twice now.
Very nice. Yeah. So Graham asked me that a while ago, and my morning routine has actually changed.
Yeah.
So really I'm up by, I haven't set an alarm in years. So I'm up by 6 or 7 o'clock every day. I just kind of naturally wake up.
Yeah.
But, first thing I do, I always just kind of walk downstairs, take my dog outside, don't pick up my phone for a little while.
Yeah.
And it's about enjoying the moment.
Sure.
And then as soon as the dog comes back inside, I start the coffee. Well, like right before we go outside, dog comes back inside, sit down, have coffee, and I'll actually sit on my laptop quickly and just try to get through the 3 things that I've prioritized for the day.
Yeah.
So,
and you've planned that
usually
ahead of time.
If I get into,
you've identified those 3 things ahead of time.
I've usually identified them the night before or even the day before I quit work. So if I don't do those three things that are a priority that day, then or that morning, they probably just won't get done that day because there's a lot of things that come up.
Yeah, that's good. And then I think having, you know, some quiet time to yourself before checking emails and text messages and stuff is important. So good stuff. You mentioned earlier that you love to read. What book are you reading right now?
So book right now, I'm reading The Challenger Sale for the third time.
Okay.
So it's probably my favorite sales book ever. It describes the process where you basically ask a bunch of questions and you try to get an understanding of what this person's understanding of is of what you're selling. Then you break it down into little pieces and then rebuild it as your actual product. So you take their problem, totally break it down, and then rebuild it as your product.
What's the author's name?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm drawing a blank, but I read that book probably a little over a year ago and actually got to go to a conference where the author did like a 4-hour workshop and got to kind of sit through like a workshop that he did based on everything he talks about in the book.
Super good book. I can't believe I can't think of his name actually.
I know I'm drawing.
My room to see if it's in here.
It'll come to me as soon as we get off here, but and I'll put it in the show notes too. So quickly, last question is, what is your definition of freedom and are you living it?
Yeah. So, the definition of freedom is a really interesting one. I think that everyone's freedom is can be very different, and people look at business owners as being free, and sometimes it's the last thing that it actually is.
Yeah.
So, my definition of freedom is basically being able to. I'm a huge family guy. Like being able to spend time with my family. I want to be able to spend time with my pets, and I just want to make sure that I wake up every day and the first thing that I think about isn't work.
Yeah.
Because if I'm thinking like you work to live, but I don't live to work. Yeah. I'm super interested in what I do, but that's not me.
Yeah.
So as long as I'm waking up every day, I can still have a couple moments on my own. Then, you know, and of course, family taking care of everything that makes me free.
Yeah.
So am I living it right now? I would say no, because I've got a very, very interesting thing going on with the tech company. So we were going through a bit of a transition phase, and that's always challenging. So hopefully I get back to that freedom soon.
Well, and I think it's phases, right? I mean, it's different chapters. And I think to your point, everyone's definition of freedom for themselves is a little bit different. And, you know, for me, at least the way I think about it, I don't know that you ever 100% get there or stay there. Cause like every time I get to the next level, I stop and enjoy it and am appreciative, but then I'm always looking to, you know, go to the next level. So look, man, I know we just ran a minute or two past, so I apologize, but can't thank you enough for making time to do this. I know everyone that listens to the podcast is going to get tremendous value from it. I've definitely enjoyed talking with you, and I'll post a link to transitive.com in the show notes so people can check out Transitive if they'd like to. Really appreciate you dropping in with me, Christian.
Great to be on, Wes. I enjoyed the conversation as well, and keep in touch.
Yeah, man, for sure. All right, man. We'll talk soon.
Right.
Take care.
Thanks.
Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number 2, FRDM.com. Or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.